Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. They say that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. What about value when it comes to what's your real estate worth? We're going to talk today about real estate valuation and appraisal on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Hey, this is Brad Sumrock, and I'm sure you've heard me before on the Real Estate Guys radio show. And today, I'm just really excited to announce for the first time ever our Apartment Investor National Conference. I wanted to put together some of the best speakers on the planet. I wanted to put together brokers, service providers, investors that are buying multifamily properties and making money in today's market right now all over the country. So Russ and Robert with the Real Estate Guys radio show are going to be there speaking and teaching. We actually have Grant Cardone, Mr. 10X himself, Uncle G. And many of you may not know, but he owns thousands of apartment units. We have Tom Wheelwright, who's going to talk about how you can save a lot of money with your apartment investments as a result of the new tax laws. And so we just have an amazing lineup of apartment investors that have made over $1 million investing in apartments. This event is going to be August 18th in Dallas, Texas, and I'll look forward to seeing you there.
Join Tom Wheelwright, Grant Cardone, and the Real Estate Guys with Brad Sumrock at the National Apartment Conference, Saturday, August 18th in Dallas, Texas. For details, send an email to bradconference@realestateguysradio.com. That's bradconference@realestateguysradio.com. Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio show. I'm your host, Robert Helms. With me, as usual, financial strategist, co-host Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
You know, it's interesting. We did all those shows on profitable niches, and then we had an Ask the Guys show. And last week, we talked kind of head in the clouds a little bit, but people are wondering, you know, the economy is so good, and yet there's all these hearkenings of what could be trouble and so forth. And I know people's brains are spinning. And it's time to bring us back down into the weeds a little bit and talk reality and a subject that is pretty near and dear to my heart for a longer story than we have time with is real estate appraisal, understanding valuation. And what appraisal is a third-party opinion of value. And it is a critical component for real estate investors to understand.
You know, it's really interesting because obviously I have a background in mortgage company and appraisals were very important because we had to have documentation. We had to have a professional opinion of value to prove to the lender that the collateral was actually good.
Right.
But before we go there, you know, when you were teaching appraisal, I would come in and do some guest teaching for you, which was always fun. It was really interesting to me how many people were in the appraisal class that weren't in the appraisal class because they wanted to be appraisers. Many of them weren't even in the real estate business as a professional, like a real estate agent or a mortgage broker. A lot of them got into the class because they wanted to be or were active real estate investors.
Oh, that was the number one reason. The first day of class, and I taught real estate appraisal, commercial appraisal, and residential appraisal for 4 or 5 years. And the first day of class, I'd always ask, you know, who's here because they want to be an appraiser? And I'd have a class of 70 or 80 people, and there'd be one or two, right? And then, well, who's a real estate broker or real estate agent looking to get some of your required classes? And then hands went up. But the vast majority of people were there for personal interest. I'm interested in this. And it's a profession that certainly merits consideration. There's reasons to like the appraisal. But I would always start the class by saying, who has a vested interest in the value of a property? Well, obviously the owner. And a potential buyer, and the neighbors. The neighbors are concerned with the value of the property, and the lender. Yeah, the lender's concerned with the value of the property, and the tenants. Well, yeah, they're concerned. Everybody's concerned with the value of the property, except for the appraiser. The appraiser is a neutral person who has no vested interest in the property, and what they're giving you, and you use this terminology, it's important to understand, is a professional opinion. They're professionals. They're licensed. They've gone on a ton of study and practice. But at the same time, it's just an opinion of value. Nothing makes an appraisal correct. An appraisal is an opinion.
I went into the mortgage business not because I wanted to be in the mortgage business. I wanted to understand the mortgage business. I wanted to understand getting funding for real estate because of wanting to invest. My point is we've got a real estate show here all about investing and our audience is investors. And you may think, oh, they're going to talk about appraisal and what do I care about appraisal? I'm not an appraiser. I'm not a real estate broker. And I'm hoping that you're getting the point. This is a show worth listening to because understanding appraisal, just like understanding debt, I mean, basically there's two things. There's paying the right price and then financing it properly. And if you do those two things, you have the chance, a good chance of having a good profitable investment. If you get those two things wrong, or either one of those two things wrong, you could have a problem. So learning to understand what an appraisal is, how an appraisal works, and we'll talk about tactical stuff just in the transactional side of stuff, but just understanding how properties are valued. I mean, there's different ways. You know, we just think, oh, it's the house next door sold for X, therefore that's the value. That's one way to do it. But when it comes to investment properties, there's other ways to do it. When you have a property that is unlike any other property and there is no commitment, then there's a whole different way to do it. And so we're going to talk about all that stuff today. It's going to be a great show. So just make sure you tune in and take good notes.
So big picture is an appraisal is typically required when you have a loan because the lender wants a third party opinion of value. But that's not the only time you should consider getting an appraisal done. So who does appraisals and why and how? Well, that's across the board depending on where you're listening. Listeners in more than 190 countries, but many of the countries, and we've been on the receiving end of appraisals in more than a half a dozen countries. So this works very similar. There's something called the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice, USPAP. And every year, it just happened again, USPAP gets updated and all the board members get together and say, hey, based on what's happened in the last year in the appraisal industry, what are we changing? But the mentality of it is that there is a universal format and methodology for appraisal. And why that's important is, stepping back, the reason you want an appraisal is to understand value. I can look at a property as an income investor and say, well, it gets X amount of rent, so I'm willing to pay this for it. And that's an opinion of value. You're an opinion as the investor. But there's a lot of property for which you're not yet at the point where it functions like an investment property, like in land acquisition, real estate development, rehab. I remember we bought a property in the Bay Area that was for sale, and our intent was to knock down the house and to subdivide the land and to create three lots and build new houses. A very different use than many of the other bidding buyers at the time. And so your use of the property is going to affect its value. Appraisers have the ability to appraise a property, we say, as is, where is, meaning its current condition. But appraisers also have the ability to give you an opinion of value if you were to do certain things. Mr. Appraiser, I want to knock this down and build a brand new house. What would that brand new house be worth? They can tell you that. And so an appraisal isn't just done for the purposes of the lender. It's not just a thing to put in the file. It's a thing to understand. And when I first started teaching appraisal, I didn't know much about it. In fact, I was invited to teach the class, and I thought, I don't know that much about appraisal. And the guy that recruited me said, all you have to do is stay one chapter ahead of the students. You'll be fine.
But you're a great student, and you have tons of practical a real-life context. So when you're reading a textbook, it's not just like I'm regurgitating what I've read, but I know you're a storyteller. You always have stories to tell about how these things fit. You know, one thing, just like the story you were telling about the property where you're going to scrape it, you know, and this is the point. You don't just get an appraisal when you're doing a transaction. You might do it when you're planning a project, so that you can kind of figure out. And I didn't want that point to get lost as you were kind of moving on, right, going into professor mode, because there's a way, you know, you might even be willing to pay more. If the appraiser came and said, yeah, the property's on, it's not in very good shape, blah, 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 you what do you care? You're going to scrape it anyway. The lender would say, well, we're not going to lend on what it's going to be. We're going to lend on what it is. So the appraisal would be bad in terms of if you were trying to go to a lender and finance your project. So that's a different story. But for the purposes of understanding what is a property worth now, so that you pay the right price for what it's worth now, and you wouldn't go, oh, but I wouldn't do this project because what it's worth doesn't make it worth it, because that's actually good, right? You're going to pay low, and then you're going to go change the use, and then you're going to come back. So I just want to—
Well, there's a big assumption there when you say, what's it worth? And that's the whole beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Exactly.
What's it worth to who? And so sometimes we're at odds with the appraiser because they don't see the value.
Sometimes.
Well, but their job is very important. So, you know, I spent a lot of time getting my mind around it. But we used to do, you know, basically in real estate transactions, I'd seen a ton of appraisals. I'd looked through appraisals. Back in the day, we could influence the appraiser. Today, it doesn't quite work like that. But we could go and help them, show them some comps.
Now, influence isn't bribe, okay? Influence is just help them, you know, because a lot of times as an investor or even an active agent in a marketplace, a lot of times you know the inventory, you know the comps, you know the lay of the land better than the appraiser.
Almost always.
Yeah.
Appraisers don't work in neighborhoods. Appraisers work in counties. Appraisers work in big areas. And, you know, realtors, real estate agents that work in a specific area know the market way better than an appraiser. And most appraisers recognize that. And the way they find their information, some of it's public, some of it's not. And that depends on jurisdiction too. So rather than get too much into the weeds about the how, we're much more about the why. Why would you need to understand valuation? And there's a whole host of reasons. The first obvious one is, well, if you're going to get a loan, you need to have the valuation. But a bigger picture than that is just for your own portfolio. An appraisal is a relatively inexpensive check and balance. I might get all caught up in, hey, I could do this and I could do that. In fact, a couple weeks ago, we had asked the guys, and you might remember the guy who said, well, I have this house in Detroit and I made it beautiful and my tenant wants to buy it for $38,000. The problem is it only appraised at $20,000. And you know what? It was probably only ever going to appraise at 20. And our suggestion to that person was, you know, maybe it might have made sense before you spent all the money to rehab the house to have an appraiser take a look, or not even an appraiser. In the practice in the U.S., we have what we call a BPO, which is a broker price opinion. And this is going to a real estate broker and asking them to give you an opinion of value. Now, if I'm thinking about listing my house, yeah, an agent's going to come over and give me the best estimate of price. But a BPO is more than that. It's not quite an appraisal. It's not done by a licensed appraiser, but it's done by someone who knows a lot about the marketplace. And that could be a starting point. I'm going to guess if this particular listener had gone to a few brokers in the area, they all would have said, oh, you're not going to get $38,000 for that house, no matter how nice you make it. I mean, you could put travertine in it and beautiful light fixtures and big screen TVs, and you're still not going to get the value because of the underlying valuation of the neighborhood.
Yeah, in that particular example, I would say you'd probably be better off going to an appraiser only because a broker's going to do this for you typically for free. Sometimes you can pay them, but most of the time they're going to do it for free in the hopes that they're going to get the listing. But you're talking about a $20,000 property or a $38,000 property. So, you know, you might get actually a little bit better work if you pay the appraiser. Go ahead and pay or offer to pay the broker. Don't try to do it on the cheap. You want a good estimate of value. If you're going to go put capital at risk, if you're going to go do an investment, put all the time and work to rehab a property, and you've got somebody just threw a dart at a wall, you know, to, you know, do a goodwill act for you, hey, I'll give you an opinion. You just want to make sure you have a really good valuation when you're actually using it as the basis for which to make further investment.
Well, sure. And, you know, we're big proponents of always hiring the right people and paying full price for it and all of that. And appraisers are unsung heroes in a lot of ways because the foundation of valuation is on their shoulders, but you want to use that to your advantage as well. You're going to have a feeling about what the value of a property is. Say it's just a single family house you want to have as a rental property. You're going to have a feeling of it because you know the neighborhood, you've been looking and so forth. But what an appraisal can do is it can be verification or it can bring up other issues that you may not understand. And so there's a lot of nuances about it. But I think the value of the property and what it's worth means more to you as the potential buyer than anybody.
Here's one of the challenges that comes up in a rising market. And we've been having pretty good markets in a lot of places. And that is that when an appraiser looks, they can look in the rearview mirror. And if the trend line is up, the price they think it's worth based on the past is going to be lower than probably what it's worth in the real market. The problem is the lender is going to go with the appraisal and not necessarily with the market. And so sometimes you just have to be aware that's where we would get at odds with the appraisers because they have to look backwards. The brokers are going to look forward. And you as an investor and you, especially if you're doing a value add, are going to be looking forward. So don't be shocked in a rising market if sometimes that appraisal doesn't actually come in where you want it to. It doesn't mean that the house isn't worth what you say it is. It just means that the comps that are in the past aren't worth the same because you were on an upward trend line.
A lot of jargon in there. We'll uncover some of that when we come back. We're talking about valuation of real estate specifically. How do we use a real estate appraiser and appraisal to our best benefit? More when we come back. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Hey, it's Robert Helms. Thanks so much for listening to the show today. I want to personally invite you to come see an amazing real estate market that combines excellent cash flow, offshore diversification, and what we affectionately call lifestyle investing. Come join me from August 24th to 27th in the beautiful country of Belize. The Real Estate Guys have been bringing investors to Belize for more than 10 years now, and our discovery trip is designed to show you the market like nobody else can. Sure, Belize is breathtakingly beautiful. The people are wonderful, and wait till you taste the food. But the real opportunity is the real estate investment potential. 2017 was the biggest year in tourism Belize has ever witnessed, and this year has started off even stronger. How does that translate to real estate investment? Well, that's what you have to come see. There's all types of opportunity in Belize when it comes to real estate investing, including both long-term and short-term rentals, commercial and retail triple net properties, business opportunities, land acquisition, development, agriculture, and more. And as the only country in Latin America with English as its official language, it's easy to understand the law. Property rights are strong, and contracts are in English. And in Ambergris Key, a unique situation exists where demand for rentals continues to outstrip supply, creating a compelling environment for investors. So come see for yourself. Join me August 24th to 27th in Ambergris Key, Belize, as we study the market, learn about the sustainable drivers, and tour lots of beautiful real estate. And like all of our field trips, there are no properties for sale during the weekend. Rather, you'll meet local providers that will help educate you about the market so that you can follow up with them after the trip if the market's interesting to you. You've heard about Belize or the Real Estate Guys for all these years. Now come see what all the excitement is about. Plus, we'll have lots of time over meals and activities to talk about all things real estate. To get the details, go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click on events where you'll find the Belize Discovery Trips. Once you register, you'll get information about our group hotel rates as well as travel details. So join me in Belize August 24th to 27th. It's a beautiful country with lots of amazing possibilities, and the only thing missing is you. Go to realestateguysradio.com under events. I look forward to seeing you in beautiful Belize.
Hi, this is Darren Hardy, author of The Compound Effect, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. Hey, check it out. The New Orleans Investment Conference is around the corner, first week of November. We're going to be there. A lot of our good friends will be there. It's an amazing event, the longest-running investment conference in the United States. You can get all the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com under events. We're talking about valuation of real estate. What is a property worth? And that really depends on what you're going to do with it. But one of the ways that we ascertain value is through appraisal. So let's talk about some of the basics of appraisal. I mentioned the uniform professional standards of appraisal, and that really culminates in a form that we often see when we look at the results of an appraisal. So we talk about an appraisal report, and it's not the appraisal. It is the documentation of what the appraiser found. And so we're not going to go through the report or any of that, but I want you to understand the three different ways that valuation happens. And you alluded to this, Russ, depending on the type of property. The job of the appraiser is to solve a problem. And that's how it's worded. The problem is, what is highest and best use? We love that terminology. It's borrowed right from appraisal, but I like it in terms of personal development, but it also works in real estate. If I have a piece of property, what's the highest and best use for this? That's the challenge or problem the appraiser is trying to solve. And then how do I know, quote unquote, what it's worth? Appraisers use three methodologies. And the first is the sales comparison method, probably the most common when it comes to, say, single family homes. And the idea is you're going to look at similar properties. So I'm listing my house for sale. I want to know what it's worth. We're going to look at similar properties in the neighborhood, similar age, similar utility, and what they've sold for recently. The perfect situation for the appraiser is the house across the street and on either side sold in the last week. Then they'd have great information to say, well, then your house is worth this. Now, not every house is the same. So what the appraiser has to do is make adjustments for features or benefits of your property compared to other properties. If you have a 3-bedroom and there's a 4-bedroom across the street, then they're going to subtract some of the value from the 4-bedroom house to get at your value. So sales comparison method, we're looking at the valuation of similar properties. Now that makes a ton of sense. And again, for single family houses, it's probably the methodology that appraisers use the most. But according to USPAP, here's what the appraiser has to do. They have to use all three approaches, and then they have to reconcile and weight based on the property. So sales comparison is the first. Now, if I was buying a bowling alley, there's really not a likelihood that there's several bowling alleys in the area that have sold recently.
Right.
So I can't use that approach. I have to use a different approach. So the other approaches are what we call the capitalization approach, or more commonly, the income approach. As real estate investors, this is going to make sense to you. I'm going to value the property based on the income it generates. Because the apartment I'm buying might not be the same number of units or the same size as the one across the street that just sold, but I am going to be able to get some great data from that to say these are what the rents are per square foot, here's the trends that you talked about, and so forth. And so the approach of income capitalization is saying, hey, we're going to look at this as an asset that produces income.
So I have a question for you, because you're the expert and I'm not in this particular form of appraisal. And the question is this. When the appraiser is doing their work to determine the income, are they just going off the pro forma, or are they going off actual financials, or are they doing a market study and comparing what the property is really doing, similar properties, or what the property would be worth in the market based on third party, not from the property or the property owner itself?
Yeah, so good question. So you mentioned the rear view mirror part, and that is that for the sales comps, when I'm looking for those comparable sales, an appraiser can only use sold and closed escrow properties. That's the part of they can't look forward.
As opposed to using listings.
Right. If I'm a real estate broker, I'm going to sit down with you and I'm going to show you, here's what sold recently. Then I'm going to show you, here's what's on the market now, because that's going to tell us our competition. And I'm also going to say, here's the ones that were listed and never sold. So obviously those prices weren't working because buyers weren't saying yes. So I can use more information, but the appraiser's limited to the rearview mirror. Now it's different when it comes to the income approach. To the income approach, yeah, an apartment building across the street that sold recently, that's a comp. But they also will look at competing product that isn't for sale. So in the income capitalization approach, I'll look at an apartment building. This isn't for sale, but it's very similar in terms of its income. And they will do direct analysis, meaning they have to go and get that information from the owner or manager of the property, as opposed to some repository of information. This is why commercial appraisals are often more expensive, because they're doing more work. Whereas residential appraisals, the appraiser will keep a database, or their company will, of what sold recently. So they have those comps at their fingertips. But when we were talking about influence before, sometimes you find up for sale by owner or an off-market deal, and you're able to bring that to the appraiser to say, hey, you might want to consider this property. Again, most jurisdictions, you can't do that anymore because they're trying to keep that neutrality. But they're looking at, for the income capitalization report, what are people renting right now? If I need my 20-unit apartment appraised, then the appraiser wants to look around and say, okay, someone who might be a tenant for your apartment building or this apartment building, where else could they go locally and what would that look like? And that gives you some trend lines. So income capitalization makes sense. Now, let's take a single-family house. In many neighborhoods, single-family houses sell to people that live in them, but also some sell to investors. We buy single-family houses and they have tenants. So you can use both the income capitalization approach and the sales comparison approach in a single family house. But an apartment building, it's harder to use comparable sales. We're going to get that data so we can see, say, cost per door. But what's really going to be more important to us is the income side. Now, the third approach is called the summation approach, or the cost segregation approach. And the cost approach says, if I'm trying to figure out the value of that bowling alley, well, I could maybe look at the income from the bowling alley. I'm not going to find a comparative bowling alley that's sold, certainly not nearby. But what I can do is figure out what would it cost today for the land and for the construction and for the development. And then they use what they call the age life method of figuring out the improvement value. And that's a lot of words, but it's as simple as this. Hey, the bowling alley is 20 years old. So I can't just say it would cost X to build one today. I have to say it'll cost X to build one today, but I'm going to take a deduction for the fact that it's 20 years old.
It's like depreciation.
It's exactly like depreciation. Now, when we think of depreciation as real estate investors, we think tax depreciation, right? We're going to take the improvements on a property and we're going to depreciate those for our tax purposes, our phantom expense. But that's not this depreciation. This depreciation is actual deterioration. The building's 50 years old, it's not in the same shape as it once was. But the summation approach is what we use if we were analyzing an airport or a baseball stadium or any kind of one-off building. Now, even in single-family houses, we can do the summation approach. Here's what a lot would be selling for today in this neighborhood. Here's what it would cost to build. And because the house is 18 years old, we're going to give an adjustment for that, and that gives us a price. So the appraiser's job, their mission, their problem to solve, is to look at the value based on these three different methodologies and then to weight accordingly. Meaning, if I'm a single family home residential appraisal, I'm going to give the majority of the weight
to the comps.
To the comparable method. I'm going to look at the income a little bit because there's some rentals in this neighborhood, and summation just to make sure I'm checking, you know, for multiple angles. If instead we are doing an appraisal on a 75 unit apartment building, then I'm probably going to wait mostly to the income approach.
Well, you know, it's interesting because after the financial crisis, we kept going around telling everybody and experiencing in many markets, you could purchase properties below replacement cost.
Yeah.
So the summation approach would say, this property is worth this, but the market is saying, no, it's not, based on the comps. Well, when that's the case, it's probably a pretty good idea to ignore the appraisal. Not to overpay, but in terms of whether or not it makes sense to buy.
Well, this is a great point, because when you get the appraisal back, and this all depends on who the client is, if the lender orders it, you may or may not see it, but usually the buyer's going to get a chance to review the appraisal, sometimes with their broker. When you read the appraisal, you don't take it at face value ever, because again, it's an opinion of value. Yes, a professional opinion, but still an opinion. You know what your ultimate use is. You know what you can and want to afford. So you read through the report and you have to ask yourself, do I agree with the premise? Do I see the appraiser's point of view or not? And nothing says you have to. And we'll talk about later in the program, what do you do if the appraisal doesn't work for you, right? And those kinds of things. But just understand that you're going to hire somebody, or your lender's going to hire someone, to come up with their opinion of value, keeping in mind they're completely detached. So we get all caught up in the value as an investor, whether we're the buyer or the seller. Sellers often have an overinflated idea of what their properties are worth. Buyers, the other way around. Buyers always want to get a deal. The appraiser's job is to be neutral and saying, absent duress, absent any undue motivation, here's what a property's worth.
Well, I think if you're being creative and you're planning to go in and you have a business plan for the particular property, it's a value add of some sort, or you're going to change the use, whether it's zoning or whether it's a floor plan, or you're going to add a room, do some type of redevelopment, or just whether you're going to rehab it or scrape it like we talked about earlier and build something completely different. I think the point is that the appraisal isn't gospel. I think that's the point you're making. It's a starting point to have a negotiation first with yourself. Does this deal make sense based on what I'm planning to do? And the more creative you are, the less likely the appraisal is going to accurately reflect the value of what you're going to do. And you may decide, hey, you know what, it's worth it to pay a little bit more. Now, when you go down that path, you say, yes, but I'm not going to be able to get a lender to work with me because they're going to pivot off the appraisal. But just because the appraisal didn't come in you don't have to use a conventional lender who's going to require an appraisal. You can negotiate private lending. You could explain to a private group of syndication partners that, hey, this is our business plan. And even though the appraisal came in and you have to have that so that you papered your file, if you will, but you explain, yes, we're going to overpay based on the appraisal. But based on the business plan, it's not going to matter because here's the return on our investment, because here's what the property's worth when we're done with it. And it looks like, you know, whatever it is we're going to do. So the appraisal's interesting, but really what matters is the business plan and the exit strategy. So again, don't get too hung up on appraisals being gospel, even though they kind of are to lenders, especially conventional lenders who are just going to check boxes and either it fits or it doesn't. If you are dealing with private lenders and there can be some negotiation, and more of that is beginning to open up, or if you're privately syndicating either debt where you're raising your own lender, you're raising money to do your own loan, or equity where you just have partners, it's a point on the curve, if you will. It's a reference point, a starting point, but it isn't the end point of what the value of the property is or whether you're paying the right price for it.
That's exactly right. It is a tool. It is not the end-all be-all. And so part of understanding an appraisal is understanding what's involved with. And we'll talk more about that when we come back. Plus, we'll play real estate trivia next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to The Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
Have you decided to invest in real estate but find you don't have the time to evaluate your options? Successful real estate investing takes expertise, market knowledge, and time. Many affluent investors with busy schedules choose to rely on real estate experts. They partner with proven teams with a successful track record. Four Peaks Capital Partners have created a system which allows accredited investors an opportunity to invest in undervalued assets. If you're an accredited investor looking for passive income, call 877-5-INCOME. That's 877-5-INCOME or visit privateincomeinvestments.com.
Forbes rated Memphis the best cash flow market in the nation. And our good friend Terry Kerr at Mid-South Homebuyers has been the premier turnkey rental property provider in Memphis for over 13 years. With an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, Terry has renovated over 750 houses. Real Estate Guys listeners have snapped up hundreds. Discover what these satisfied investors already know. Mid-South's properties are completely renovated with a one-year warranty and a lifelong rental guarantee. They're affordable, well-managed, and easy to own. Perfect for beginning investors and veterans alike. Get in on the action. Contact Terry and his team via email at midsouth@realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Patrick Donahoe, CEO of Paradigm Life. Wall Street and banks spend billions of dollars per year in advertising with the goal to convince you that they are the solution. But take a look around. None of their advice has worked. If you're listening to this, odds are pretty good that you're already a real estate investor, or at least becoming one. So why do you do it? Is it to hedge inflation, the tax benefits, or maybe it's to get your money away from Wall Street? It's because of these benefits and so many more that I created the Real Estate Investor's Guide to the Perpetual Wealth Strategy. When you combine successful real estate investing with the perpetual wealth strategy, you have the recipe for what has helped the wealthy to establish their financial well-being for decades. You can download the Real Estate Investor's Guide to the Perpetual Wealth Strategy today by clicking the Resources tab on the Real Estate Guys Radio homepage. Don't wait, go download it now.
Hey, it's Ken McElroy. I listen to The Real Estate Guys, and so should you.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. We're so glad you're tuned into the show today. We're talking about some practical ideas for real estate valuation and specifically learning a bit about real estate appraisal. Before we get back to that discussion, it's time to play a real estate trivia. That's your chance to win a prize by knowing today's real estate trivia question. And if you're the first person that guesses correctly, you're going to get an amazing prize. It's Robert Kiyosaki's awesome book, Second Chance. Not one of his better known books, but one of his better written books. And if you are the winner of today's contest, you're going to get that book. In just a minute, I'm going to give you a question, and if you think you know the answer, send your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Include your name, the answer to the question, and your mailing address so we can send you this big old thick book. Last week on The Real Estate Guys, we had Brad Sumrock on the program talking about how to save $1 million in taxes with apartments. We asked this: which single letter of the alphabet is not used in the name of any of the 50 U.S. states? Well, it's the letter Q. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. The Appraisal Institute is a global professional association of real estate appraisers that has more than 20,000 professionals in nearly 50 countries throughout the world. Here's what we want to know. In what real estate market is the Appraisal Institute headquartered? Lots of places around the world where their members get together and so forth, but where's its headquarters? The Appraisal Institute is headquartered somewhere. If you know where, send your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Include your name, the answer to the question, and your mailing address. Because if you're the first with the right answer, you're going to get a copy of Robert Kiyosaki's awesome book, Second Chance. That's today's real estate trivia question. We're talking about valuation of real estate. That often means that we get a third party to give us some validation, and that's typically done by an appraiser. Now, you and I have had the opportunity to meet appraisers all around the world. In fact, I remember we were on a field trip, and we met an appraiser who was outside of the U.S., but he explained to us that they basically use the same concept as USPAP. Even though they're not members, we talked about the Appraisal Institute and Trivia, the Appraisal Foundation that sets all of that up in the U.S., even though they're not, they use the same methodology. And having had appraisals done in other places, we see that they talk about the comparable market approach, the income approach, and the summation approach, and they reconcile those to come up with value. Now, It is our practice to often get an appraisal when we are doing a change of use of any kind. You know, you mentioned zoning. That's a great example. If I'm going in and I have a property I think that could have a higher and better use if I got the zoning changed, I may or may not be able to do that. But an appraiser can get a conversation with you about, well, if it was zoned, you know, C3, then it would look different in terms of its valuation because of what you could do with the property. And that's the mindset anyway. This highest and best use concept that appraisal gives us is a good one. If I see a piece of land, I'm like, what could I do with that? An example I used to use in class is, say there's, you know, 200 lots in a subdivision, and 199 of them are single family houses, and one is a bare lot. So what's highest and best used for that bare lot? Well, the answer may seem obvious, but it's not necessarily. Highest and best use might be a house, because that's what every other lot is. But highest and best use could also be a convenience store, because they need to service that area. And it's not just about what the market demands, but it does consider things like zoning, what's available, what entitlements are available. So not to get too complicated, but the different types of real estate have different types of appraisal professionals. If I'm buying a retail building, then I'm going to make sure I lean on a retail appraiser. If I'm buying commercial property of any kind, there's going to be specialties. If I'm buying property for agriculture, whole different world. You and I went to an agriculture event a few years back and met all these different tradespeople, including a farm appraiser. And this guy's job is to go look at a farm, whether it's productive or not, and come up with a valuation. I'm like, well, that's fascinating. How do you know, right? Well, because that's his business. He has to know things about the richness of the soil and about how far away crops are and what were the last several crops that were there because of the nutrient depletion in the soil and all kinds of stuff you'd never think about. So this is why we always rely on third-party professionals.
You know, I think there's something interesting in there. This comes up all the time with our syndication mentoring club, because you get people who go out there and they're interested in an investment opportunity and they are exploring, and sometimes they get introduced to things they're not familiar with. And a lot of people who are A students, and that's the type of people that you often had in your appraisal class, that were trying to master the content themselves. And I want to encourage you, if you're listening to the show and you're hearing all this jargon and you're hearing, wow, appraisals are a whole lot more complicated than I thought, this isn't about making you an expert or encouraging you to go take an appraisal class,
right,
or get certified or any of that. You don't have to do that to be an investor, just like there's many things you don't need to understand to be a good syndicator. What you do have to do is be conversant. You have to have enough knowledge that you know when to hire an expert and what kind of an expert there is. And so the point that you're making, Robert, which is a good one, is that even within the expertise of appraisal, there are sub-expertises. The same is true with lawyers. You could make the argument the same is true with accountants. We ask people all the time when we sit down with a potential provider, tell me about your current clientele. Tell me about the kind of business they're in. Tell me about the kind of problems that they come to you with and that you solve regularly, because I want to know that that person is spending the bulk of their time and attention, because every human being, and these people are just human beings, they only have so much time to be experts on any one thing. And so you want to make sure that they're putting their time and effort into being expert in the thing that you need them to be expert in, which relieves you, and this is such a great relief, it relieves you of having to be the expert. And it allows people like us to dabble in a lot of different things, because we only have to know enough to know how to go get the help we need. So please don't be overwhelmed with all of this information or feel like, oh my gosh, I've got to become an appraisal expert. You don't. You just have to become conversant.
Well, absolutely. You have to be aware enough to know which questions to ask and what makes sense. And I think part of it is that too many people just rely on what the appraisal said. And we're going to cover that before we're done. And also the fact that depending on your use, you can just hire a fee appraisal. I can have appraisal done on my house. I want to know what it's worth. And I'm going to have appraisal done. I'm going to spend a few $100 and I'm going to get a good opinion of value. That's great. That's different than when the lender hires an appraisal. So sometimes you don't have any choice, and that's a different story. But back to specialties. So, you know, I did not know that much about the appraisal profession, even though I'd seen some appraisals. So I was kind of an overzealous professor, and I went and met with the state commissioner of appraisal. He was speaking at an event, and I walked up to the guy. He was a great guy, and I introduced myself, and I said, I've just started teaching a class on appraisal, and I have no idea what I'm doing, basically. And he was great. He gave me a bunch of resources. resources. He gave me some ideas. But at this event, there were different people in the appraisal profession. And I met this guy who actually had come and speak as a guest speaker, like I had you speak at those classes sometimes, because he was a fascinating guy. He was an appraiser, been in the business for more than 30 years. He had two specialties. So talk about niches. Check out his two specialties. One was he appraised airports. Now, that's kind of a unique piece of property, right? And he would explain that he had to go to the FAA. He had to understand what the approved routes were and where the congestion was and all. I mean, the guy knew the thing. And so he was actually there to talk about that specialty. And then he said, I have another specialty. But he never really talked about it. So when I talked to him at the event, I go, what's your other specialty? He goes, yeah, so I am the foremost expert on appraising haunted properties.
Haunted properties.
Haunted properties. That was his, that's one of the things that he was often called to do. He had developed this expertise somehow. And, you know, the more haunted a property is, the more or less value it has. I'm like, wow. So just know that there are specialties for almost anything. We're talking about real estate valuation, how you can figure out what a property's worth and when to hire an appraiser and fun stuff like that. We'll continue the discussion when we come back. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Did you know that industrial real estate is one of the most desired and highest return asset classes in the U.S. today? E-commerce warehousing, distribution, server centers, construction, and automated manufacturing are just a few of the businesses increasing the demands for industrial properties. And you can invest in commercial properties for as little as $50,000 by utilizing experienced syndicators with the track record and experience to locate, negotiate, vet, and manage the best products in the best markets. Wilson Investment Properties is a national syndicator headquartered in Silicon Valley with a long, successful track record of investment real estate and commercial syndications. The Cincinnati Industrial Portfolio is an offering with 17% projected average annual returns and available while shares last. Email commercial at realestateguysradio.com for more information and private placement memorandum on this investment and for your free white paper on commercial real estate. Again, email commercial at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Steve Forbes. You're listening to The Real Estate Guys. Have fun. You'll learn something.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. We appreciate you listening, and tell a friend about The Real Estate Guys. Hey, coming up in September, it's the Secrets of Successful Syndication. If you've wanted to put together bigger deals and make more money using other people's money, come on out to the Secrets of Successful Syndication. It happens in Dallas, Texas. You get all the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com under events. We're talking about real estate appraisal and understanding valuation. And I think one of the things I want to make sure people understand is that the appraisal is often a cost. But the appraisal can also be a thing that can make you money.
Yeah, so I think you're probably talking about using it in your negotiations.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, really, you got to have a starting point for negotiation. And if you're going to be using financing, most sellers understand that the lender is going to be bringing the bulk of the money. And so you've got to satisfy the lender.
And generally, the contract has an appraisal contingency.
Correct. So this now gives you the opportunity to kind of have a good cop, bad cop positioning, using the lender as the heavy who's forcing you to retrade or renegotiate this thing because the what you originally agreed on isn't going to come in.
Right. I offer $300,000 and the appraisal comes in at $280,000. So now you're at this stalemate. And here's how that works. If the appraiser says $280,000, then the lender's going to loan you, say, 80% of the $280,000 or the purchase price, right, whatever's lower. And so the seller wants $300,000. You've agreed to $300,000. And now it comes in at $280,000. So most sellers are going to say, well, you have to put in the other $20,000. You have to bridge the difference. But you can go in and negotiate and say, well, you know, Mr. Seller, I made you an offer based on what we thought market value was. You had a price, I had an idea, we came together, had a meeting of the minds, but we're not experts. Neither one of you or I are professionals. So we had the lender brought a professional in whose opinion is it's not worth $300,000. So you know what? I can't pay $300,000. I can only pay the $280,000.
And every other buyer that comes in behind me, if you say no to my offer, and let's see, there's nobody standing behind me right now. So, you know, of course, there could be, and you're going to have to deal with that too. You may decide in a hot market you're going to have to come to table because the guy behind you might, depends right on how bad you want the property.
And that happens.
But just assuming, you know, that it's the two of you, then you know, it's like, okay, so let's have a conversation about how we can make this thing work. And it's a negotiation. And it's like, what are you, Mr. Seller, looking to get out of this? Maybe something that is non-financial. It's how quickly do you want to move in, move out? Do you want to have a rent back? Or is there personal property involved? I mean, there's all kinds of different things, you know, depending on the uniqueness of the property. The point is the appraisal is the beginning point of a negotiation. And then you can sweeten deals with something other than cash. Now, the one thing you do have to be careful of, depending on the terms of your loan agreement, is having additional debt that is not disclosed to the lender. So be careful about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember we brought a house once that was furnished completely. And for the seller's convenience, he's like, you know what? I'm not going to use this furniture ever again. And I'll just include it, right? But it had a lot of value in his mind. He had outfitted this property. He'd only spent about 30 nights in it in 3 years. So it was virtually a brand new house, virtually brand new furniture. But the stumbling block was when the appraiser and the lender required him to sign a statement that said it was worth no more than $500. He said, well, that's not true. I'm like, well, the reason they're saying that is, and we actually got the document reworded to say that, yes, he was admitting it was worth no more than $500 on the open market, but that he was leaving it for his convenience. Because the guy spent a lot of money on the furniture and he thought, I don't want to sign something that says it's worth only $500. But the reason is the one you alluded to, that the lender is basing the value of the property. So the other way to use an appraisal, though, an appraisal can be a very useful tool, not just in the negotiation on a sale, but when it comes time to set a valuation. We might decide to buy a property together. And we have a clause in our agreement that says, hey, if 10 years from now, one of us wants to buy out the other, how do we figure out what it's worth? Well, often you'll say in the contract, each will get an appraisal, we'll add up the value of those appraisals and divide by two, and that'll be the price. So sometimes we need that third-party detached opinion of value for other business reasons than just purchasing.
Yeah, well, and again, it's a starting point for a negotiation, and that's what you're trying to do. I mean, you know, the most awkward point in a negotiation is a starting point. Like, who's going to put the number out first,
right?
You know? And so typically in a normal negotiation, somebody's going to put out a number that's really high and somebody's going to put out a number that's really low. And then both people are going to be insulted. And then you go back and forth. And so this can kind of take the edge off a little bit. It narrows the range. It's like, okay, here we are. This is it. But the thing, like when you're short, like an owner carry back, you know, they say, well, okay, I'll give you your price, but you got to carry it back. Just before you start getting creative like that, make sure you really work with your mortgage professional and understand the precise terms of the loan that you're targeting, because sometimes the lender's not going to allow you to have that kind of a situation going on.
Well, and that's a good thing to bring up, because back in the day, right, before the big meltdown, the appraisal world was different. And every year they update USPAP, and there was a lot of that happening in 2008 and 2009. And one of the things that came from that is that the lender typically is the person that hires the appraiser, owns the appraisal, and is the only one that can have any kind of influence over what they're looking for. But part of the concept in general for appraisal is that it's very common. In fact, it's the most common when there's a purchase contract. The appraiser knows the price. The appraiser is told this house has been sold for $300,000, and the appraiser's job is to quote-unquote bring it in, meaning they're substantiating it. So it's not surprising that sometimes the appraisal comes in exactly at purchase price. But again, their job is to solve the problem of valuation, and if a buyer and seller have agreed to a price and the appraiser can justify that price, often they'll bring in that price.
Well, that used to be the moral dilemma for appraisers because they were being chosen by the lender based on favoritism. And if you didn't bring the appraisal in, you didn't get selected. So Dodd-Frank cleaned that up so that you weren't allowed to do that anymore. And so the appraiser could really bring in a unbiased opinion of value. You know, I don't know. I haven't dug deep into the latest Dodd-Frank revisions. They rolled back certain provisions. And so I'm not exactly sure what the current state of the art is because that's a fairly recent development. But we are trying to ease things up a little bit in some ways. We think we already know from a community banking point of view, we've covered that in our newsletter, that it's probably going to open some things up as far as availability of lending through community banks. But coming back to this appraisal issue, the idea was to keep the appraiser as neutral as possible and not influenced even by the prospect of losing business. Now, here's a challenge. The challenge is that it goes into this lottery system and you just get assigned an appraiser and you may not get a very good one, but you're stuck with them. And there's not much you can do about that. And so that's one of the downsides of it.
Yeah. And that really depends on where you go and what kind of reason you had for getting the appraiser. But the appraiser, remember, is a neutral party. They do not have a vested interest in the value of the property, but they are professionals in figuring it out. So lots of different ways to use valuation. Even more importantly today, we just want you to know enough so that when you're involved in a transaction, you can read through an appraisal report and say, yeah, it makes sense. I see what they're saying. And sometimes it doesn't. These are just human beings. And so even though they have a professional opinion, it's just an opinion.
I think one thing, though, I mean, if you do take the time to really look at a detailed appraisal, I think you can begin to get some ideas about what adjusts value. And if you understand that, especially if you're going to go in and do some type of a value add work, you know, you may go and say, oh, I watch HGTV and I have ideas what brings in value. Okay, well, reality TV is anything but real. But, you know, you can certainly learn some things. But if you get down and really look at the document, then you can begin to understand, hey, if I do this or I do that, I can really bring some value in. So there is some benefit to really getting to know an appraiser and understanding, you know, how an appraisal really works, and then understanding what you can do in a particular property. So it only costs a few $100 to get an appraiser to come out and give you an opinion of value. And maybe you take them to lunch or pay them a little extra because, again, you're not trying to influence them in a deal. You're just trying to get them to teach you how you might be able to take a particular piece of property and do something to it to create additional value that is just equity and bottom line profits when you sell or refinance.
You probably can't even be at the appraisal if it was ordered by the lender. But if you hired the appraiser, show up and be there and ask questions. Again, the appraisal isn't the report. Same thing when it comes to inspections, you know, being there and it's a relationship business and all those kinds of things, you'll learn a ton about it. And hopefully you've got some better ideas about real estate valuation. Hey, registration is now open for the Secrets of Successful Syndication. We're going to be in Dallas, Texas in the middle of September. This is an awesome event. If you've ever thought about investing in a bigger deal alongside a seasoned investor as part of a real estate syndication or joint venture, or if you've thought, you know what, I've run out of my own money and my own ability to qualify and I still want to do deals, then maybe a syndication business makes sense for you. It's an amazing seminar. We'd love to see you there.
Yeah, it's a great way to combine the best of both worlds. You get to combine the wonderful investment vehicle of real estate with owning your own business. So instead of having to work at a job maybe that you don't like to earn money and then invest on the side, you can be a full-time investor managing other people's money who are busy working at jobs they love, but they have money that needs to be put to work. So you can spend your life working to earn money and save and investing small, or you can work to raise money from wealthy people and invest big and be full time. So if that sounds interesting to you, come on out to the Secrets of Successful Syndication. You're going to meet some real life people who started out as students and have gone on to build successful syndication businesses. You're going to hear from technical experts. We're going to explain to you what syndication is, how it works, who you need to be, what you need to learn. And, you know, you may decide it's not for you, But we think this is probably, in fact, I'm convinced that syndication is the single best business opportunity in real estate right now. And if you think you might be interested in it, come on down and join us. We're going to have a good, good time.
Plus, you'll have not only one, but two opportunities to buy Russ and I a beer. So come on out to the Secrets of Successful Syndication. You'll get all the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com under events. Until next week, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723, extension 4. That's 888-489-7723, extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.